Hey, everybody. Good
Good
evening.
evening.
Good
Hello.
evening.
I feel like we need to wait a moment and get some feedback as to whether the audio is any good, because it feels like lately it's different every time, and I don't know why.
Because and it hasn't been I guess I had a different setup last week, so maybe things
Oh, okay.
are
Okay. So
different.
we're kind of back to your default setup now.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens. This week we're joined by Jason from Game Tech US, who we really only kind of met like a couple of weeks ago,
Right.
randomly. I mean, like obviously, we'd
They're
never.
very aware of your doings.
But we had never really like talked too much until somebody. I think it was right after the stream where I had the modded Game Gear out. And then you posted something. It posted a links for sale, and someone because I said something about it, how I want to get a links on that stream, and then somebody like tweeted to both of us, and then here we
Yeah,
are.
I just posted one for sale that was McWheel screen modded.
And that's like it's funny because I was like, I'm gonna talk about the portable stuff, so I guess I'm just gonna go right into it. That's kind of something that is a little bit newer for you, is the. The portable
Yeah, it's the
stuff.
first one I've ever done.
You think it was for those that don't know, Jason does some excellent modding work and system repairs,
On YouTube.
and posts a lot of them on YouTube, and goes
Well,
through like buys a lot of things that don't work off of eBay and tries to fix it too.
yeah, I want to clarify that I don't do it for people so much. So don't try to email me and say, "Hey, I got a bunch of stuff you can fix and modify," because I don't do that anymore. I used to. Yeah, I can definitely see how that's a tough game to stay in for sure.
It was the
NES RGB days that burned me out on it, because I was doing probably 20 or 30 a week. Wow.
And the problem with the NES RGB was there's so many options. You have to explain everything to every customer, and you would generate over 100 emails per order. And it Oh.
was just insane. And And
just
you
the stress
were,
of having somebody's console here waiting for me to get to it was just too much.
yeah, and you were kind of integral to the development of that mod.
I'm not,
See, I knew you'd deny it, but
I don't know how integral I really was. I mean, I did.
well, I mean, you were kind of the test runner of the hardware, as far as I
Well,
understand,
there was
anyway.
people before me doing it. I think even Draken got that kit before I got it.
Oh,
Yeah.
he's
He
the
was
one
the
that's like known for all the
only
hot glue,
North
right?
American guy.
Draken, isn't he the one that's like known for like the hot glue?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but certainly I think you kind of became the Kevtris is obviously the mastermind, but in a lot of ways I think you were kind of the face of the NES RGB mod after Kevtris. At least that was my perspective.
Well, you gotta get your kit straight here. NES RGB is Tim Worthington, and High Def NES is Tetris.
I'm spitting the wrong words out of my mouth. I was talking about high def NES is what I was talking about.
Oh yeah, I was very integral in that.
Okay, so okay, you admit that. See, I was just saying the wrong dang thing. Yeah, I meant high def NES all along. Yes.
Dry's been like really into writing this PS2 episode, so his mind is
Yeah,
like so
like
many places right now, probably.
Yeah, I have spent like this whole weekend writing more about PS2 backwards compatibility on PlayStation 3 than I ever thought a person would need to write. It's been interesting. We're borrowing launch PS3 from Scott Davis, who's a viewer of the show. And I've got my own Metal Gear Solid 4 bundle unit, which I believe was the last system that
you know, supported playback of PS2 discs.
Right.
I don't think they, I think that was like the final one that they shipped. And then of course there's the PS2 classics that you can play on any system. Something that I didn't realize, I'm curious to know if you knew this. I have long not quite understood why backwards compatibility was removed from systems, because I had all these years believed that on the Metal Gear Solid 4 unit, like we have, that it was a totally software-based emulation, because people call it the software emulation model,
but it's
or
only
something
half.
Like that. But it's only half, and I had not realized that until recently, that it's got the graphics synthesizer. The emulation is on the emotion engine, the CPU. That never made any sense to me. But I had never actually ran across the information somehow all these years that the graphics synthesizer is in those systems. I'm like, why did they remove it if it was all emulation? But yeah, so it's actually really interesting. And if I had more faith in the longevity of fat PS3s, it would like become my favorite way to play PS2 games, because it actually like offers, I would say, tangible visual benefits, whether you're playing it on HDTV or on a CRT. It's actually pretty crazy. So I'm actually like pretty excited about that. I think it's going to be like way late in the episode, but it's going to be an exciting part. It's probably like at least like 10 minutes of material that I've written on PS3 alone. It's stupid. But I'm actually, you know, I'm sure there were some questions. I wasn't really tuned into Twitter today or anything, but I'm sure like with the release of our new episode, there have probably been some questions about, you know, where's the PS2 RGB episode, et cetera, et cetera. Because I know we were saying, you know, we were going to be working on it in August, which we were in terms of, you know, some of the early prep work. And with the hope that it would release in September, and here it's the end of September and it's not ready. In fact, we're still writing it. It's just taken a lot longer to get through that
writing. How many pages is it so far?
And testing and research phase than I expected. So it's definitely going to be sometime in October. But hopefully maybe we can, you know, get the first draft hammered out, you know, in the next day or so. Get it fact-checked, and maybe, you know, by the end of this week, maybe we can even have our basic on-camera stuff shot, and then it's just probably 2 to 3 weeks of intense editing from there. It is currently standing at 16 pages.
Okay.
I mean, typically I estimate that a page of content is like 3 and a little bit minutes. So, you know, multiply that by, you know, 3 and add a few minutes, and yeah, and it's not done yet. I'm hoping to tighten up the section talking about cables quite a bit, because it goes, I mean, that goes on for like 5 pages as it is. And I feel like it might be a little too much. I feel like it. I don't know if it's going to keep interesting the whole time, if all the information is relevant. And that's a lot of work on you, too, because I have that segment assigned to you. So, yeah, it's overwhelming, but, you know, I'm starting to get excited about it. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. So hopefully I can tighten it up a bit. And hopefully the writing will be done in you know, just a day or two. So
yeah.
So which one of you does all of like the research? He's talk about writing and whatever.
A lot of it comes down to whoever is going to be editing the episode.
Yeah, pretty much. We're kind of like independent units. You know, we both write, we both edit, we both shoot, we both capture gameplay, research.
Like specific episodes. I guess.
Yeah, for example, the last console-specific episode we did was Saturn, and, you know, Corey, you know, handled almost all of that. In terms of the research and everything, you know, I went back and checked some things, and I had some questions, and then we double checked a few things, but
there's a reason. I think that there's a reason why Tri has like the harder episodes, because he's overall much better at like researching and writing than I am. I think.
I mean, there are definitely like certain aspects and systems that like you know so much more about, and I just don't quite grasp. But, but yeah, like this episode is it's a big one for sure. It's a big one for sure. I'm going to need you to capture a lot of random games for me.
Fine. That's fine. Yeah, so tonight I'm going to be playing Bonk's Revenge. I don't know if I'll be able to beat it. I don't know if it has unlimited continues, but if it does, I might be able to beat it.
I think the first one had unlimited continues, but you had to go back to the beginning of the world, if I remember correctly.
That's not so bad, though.
All right, well, let's see it.
All right. Jason originally wanted me to play the first one, but I was like, you know, can I play the second one? Because I've already finished the first one.
Mm.
And I was like, well, can I play this one? So that
No, you may not.
And I should specify that I am not using my RGB modded Duo R tonight. I'm doing a little something different. I'm playing it. I don't know if it says it in the description here, but I'm playing it like on a TurboGrafx 16 using the DB Electronics graphics booster with HD Retrovision Genesis component cables.
Well, I mean, just from a glance, it looks really good.
Yeah, I had to crank up the brightness a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The FrameMeister, but
on the FrameMeister.
Yeah. So it kind of more closely matches what I have on the PVM.
Yeah, but I mean, it's looking clean, like really clean.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it, I think. And this is specifically the one that's the version of the graphics booster that Stone Age Gamer sells. They hit, like the engine block that comes in the shell.
The enclosure.
Right.
So what are you expecting from this? Are you expecting it to be harder, easier, about the same as the first Bonk? I mean, what do you know
maybe.
About the differences?
I've always felt like Bonk games kind of control kind of weird.
Yeah, it's definitely a learned skill.
Right.
You know, I've only played the first, and that was just a few months ago. But I really enjoyed it. And I almost got Bonk's Revenge at Missouri Game Con, because there was this one seller that had like just a bunch of Hue cards, just a ton of Hue cards laid out, and Bonk's Revenge was one of them. I thought, I should get that. I'm going to get that. And I was like about to go over there. Like we were like at our table, because as weird as it seems, we had our own table at Missouri Game Con. We were sitting at our table, and I was like, you know, I'm thinking like in the next few minutes, like I'm going to get up and I'm going to go over to that table around the corner and get Bonk's Revenge. And then this guy comes by our table, you know, viewer of the show, and he comes to talk to us, and he's like, oh man, look, I've got all this stuff. I just bought a ton of TurboGrafx games.
Bought everything.
And I'm like, oh. But it's totally cool, because I got so much cool stuff at Missouri, I feel like. And I literally ran my budget down completely, because I brought a set amount of cash that I wasn't going to go over.
What did you have at your table?
Nothing.
Us. we had a piece of paper that said, I think it just said RGB, that I think Douglas from Loaded Run Games wrote.
Yeah.
Put on our table.
Jason, did you want me to play the first one because are you like a pretty big fan of the first Bonk?
Yeah, that was the one of three games I had for the TG16 that I had when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I know that game really well. I've never touched this one.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big misconception about me. I'm not a gamer. I don't sit around and play games hardly ever because I get addicted to games and I'll lose 3-4 months of my life. I'll look up and I'll be like, what happened?
What was the last one that you like really got addicted to?
Skyrim.
Oh, okay.
It happened to coincide with me moving and I couldn't do anything anyway, so I bought a 360 Slim and that game. It was literally like 3-4 months.
See, I always find it like personally like really hard to get into to games when I'm moving. Like I always just like, you know, I'll start something and I'll just have to revisit it later because it's just not feeling right.
Well, it was a situation where I was staying with a friend while the whole buying house process was going on, you know, and that stuff can take like a month or two sometimes. So I was at my buddy's house most of this time. I wasn't actually moving anything or doing anything. I just happened to be, you know, in between places. Because
mm-hmm.
from where I moved from was like a 3-hour drive. So I come up here and stayed while I was buying this house.
So you continued playing then, like after you finished moving, obviously.
Sure. Oh yeah.
So what did you say were your big TurboGrafx games again?
This was the big one. I had Legendary Axe, and of course. Okay.
Did you ever finish Legendary Axe?
Probably not. I don't remember.
Yeah, I got that pretty recently myself. I haven't. Made a serious attempt at it yet, but it seems really good.
Yeah, it is. For sure, the first one is. I guess the second one's pretty good, too. Although I have not. I have it, but I haven't really played it much. I know there's a one-up around here, I think.
Yeah, I think I've told the story before about how my cousin's husband had a TurboGrafx in college, and it was stole. I mean, this was like, you know, PlayStation N64 days. So like, you know, whoever stole a TurboGrafx in those days, I am assuming was aware of what it was and perceived that they wanted a TurboGrafx specifically, because otherwise someone would have looked at that and thought it was junk. But I've often thought about that because I've thought, you know, if that wasn't stolen, it would probably be my TurboGrafx.
Was there any games with it? Do you remember?
I know he had Bonk because he was real excited about Bonk on the virtual console. Also, I love the elevators in these games. So cool. But I know he had Bonk. And I'm not real sure about other stuff. But yeah, it's definitely been a series that I was unsure about for a long time, but then it kind of seemed like a thing to get if I was going to get a PC engine, which I ended up getting I ended up getting the Japanese version, PC Genjin, because it was in a bundle. I found it in a bundle on an eBay seller's page. They had Legend of the Valkyrie and the Japanese version of this, and then Shibibin Man, or however you pronounce it, and I hadn't heard of. But I mean, the bundle was a good deal for Bonk and Legend of the Valkyrie alone, so I was like, okay, well, I'll get this. And I'm really looking forward to playing Legend of the Valkyrie. But yeah, so I played it, and I like it. Part of the reason I was interested in it is because, like, I'm not like really a much of a shmup guy, and like that's like what I think for most people defines the TurboGrafx / PC Engine scene is shmups,
right?
And
yeah. Even what's his name was talking about that. Smoke Monster was talking about putting out a pack just of the PC Engine shooters.
Well, see, I think it would be more interesting. I've actually thought about, like, once I get more experience with the system, maybe I should do, like, some sort of video like this. Like a PC Engine guide for people who aren't big shmup players. Like, I think that would be interesting because it feels like, you know, if you aren't a big shmup person, it feels like, eh, maybe the PC Engine isn't the system I want. But you know, there's you know, if you start looking, there's actually some pretty interesting stuff. So,
oh yeah,
maybe once I play some more games, you know, maybe I can do a video like that someday. I think that'd be fun.
Jason, I think we talked about this before. You are one of the main people that designed like the current mod. Like the region mod for the it's used on a lot of turbos right now in PC engines.
I don't know if I'm the main person. Like I don't know because I'm not on like the PC Engine forums as much anymore. But there's another one out there that's similar, but it uses like a flat flex cable to go up under the cue card pins. You still cut them like mine, but it's a little different. And I think they just call it the Obey Chip version 2 or something like that. And it'll actually in the Turbo Express, and mine doesn't. It just doesn't fit.
So you have to do something.
I don't know if they're selling more than I am, but I don't really sell a lot of them.
So you have to do something to the hue card pins to make it work? Or
you don't have to on the TG16. I have a version that is where you cut traces on the motherboard instead of cutting pins on the hue card slot.
Mm-hmm.
But on Duo and most PC Engine stuff, yeah, I cut nine pins on the hue card slot.
Interesting.
My mod. Because you're basically taking, you know, eight traces plus a ground right in the middle of all these, and you're flipping them.
Mm-hmm.
And connecting them back together. That's US, Japan. That's their region mod for the PC Engine TD16 family.
I like how the PC Engine looks, so like that was the main reason, and plus the PC Engine is just like much cheaper to get games for. Right. But I still want the option to play American games, but I'm mostly focusing on Japanese games just for cost reasons. I don't intend to like come up with some crazy PC Engine collection or nothing, but you know, I've already got more games than I thought I'd have, so it's. It's been pretty cool.
It's a fun thing to get into. I'm the same way. I have a lot more than I ever expected to get.
Yeah, Voltar did for me a interface unit RGB mod, which I think he said he wasn't going to be doing any more of those because I guess a lot trickier and kind of, I guess it's kind of tightly packed with a lot of electronics inside, and so it's like a little bit inherently noisy unless you kind of work against that, you know. So I think he did some work to minimize it, but you know, I think like the interface unit plus CD unit is like by far, in my opinion, the coolest looking of the PC Engine TurboGrafx family. I don't care for the American consoles, though. I'm sure that would offend Jason because he grew up with it.
Not necessarily. I mean, who knows what would have happened if they would have released it, well, you know, like the PC Engine here in the same form factor.
You know? Well, I don't know if this is entirely true, but I read once that it was because they didn't want to. You know, I guess they thought Americans were going to be thinking like, oh, well, this box is so small. Like, why does it cost so much money?
Sure.
And so they made it bigger than it needed to be just to.
Well, that's
create this illusion of, you know, you were getting something bigger and more powerful. Whereas, you know, I think in Japan, they're like, ooh, wow, you know, so much power packed into a small form, which I think is neater. I mean, I just think the original Japanese PC Engine is just one of the coolest looking systems. And like, cue cards are like some of the coolest physical media. Like, I just, I really love them. But the American TurboGrafx, I'm not a fan of the look. And especially like, you know, when you put the, you know, the CD add-on, like it goes in the back, and so it's like it's wide, and then it goes deep, and it's.
Well, yeah, the whole form factor, the big form factor thing, that started with Nintendo.
Yeah,
that's true. You know, that is true.
Because they didn't make something like had to look like a VCR.
Which I mean, I love. I mean, personally, I love the NES look. I mean, I might be biased.
I gotta grab that NES chicken.
NES was my first console, and I believe is still my favorite, but basically, you know, my opinion is that all
it's raining turkeys, guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's raining turkeys.
That's pretty great. But is raining turkey as good as wall meat?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know if it matters. It's turkeys. I always like that. You turkey? People, a friend of mine his dad's go-to insult.
Insult?
Yeah.
I don't quite understand the visual representation of those like blocks in the sky.
Yeah.
Like what, like they're like separating and then turning like transparent. I don't really understand what's supposed to be going on there.
I don't know. Whoa. There's a lot of turkeys ran in though.
Well, I know there were a few versions of the original Bonk. I'm assuming that this and the third one were only really on PC Engine.
Oh, yeah. I think that the one that's on the NES is, like, original.
Yeah. That was just, and it's expensive.
Yeah. Ooh, another one up.
I'm definitely glad to have played this version. On the other hand, I personally think that the NES version of Jackie Chan's Action Kung Fu, I just like the style of that better than the Turbo version. So I'm glad I got the NES version of that, but I'm definitely glad I got the NES version or PC Engine version of Bonk, which I may I was tempted. Really, I was also tempted at Too Many Games to get a Bonk's Revenge that was there as well, but it wasn't in that good a shape. I think the one at Missouri was in pretty good shape. But, you know, what I'll probably ultimately do, unless I just see it at a convention and really want to just get it then and there, I'll probably just go on eBay and get the Japanese version.
Yeah, makes sense. I gotta get those fries.
They've got a P on them. What do you think that stands for?
You don't want to know.
I mean, I'm assuming that's just like the typical, you know, 80s, 90s video game thing. If you just put P on your power up, so I assume it means power fries.
Maybe, probably that would make the most
sense. Was that a power soda? I saw you grab too.
Oh yeah,
a pea soda.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that out loud. That didn't sound as good out loud as it sounded in my head.
I am watching the chat, but sometimes it scrolls by pretty fast. If anybody's like trying to ask a question to me, you have to like tag me in it or I won't see it.
Yeah, just if anyone has any questions, you know, it's just go for it.
Oh, You know what I can talk about real quick?
Yeah.
I did see in the chat earlier something about me being a reseller. There was a episode I did about the NES Classic Mini when it came out. I got one. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of talking about how it's may or may not be high definition competition, whatever. And I said something about possibly selling it. So ever since then, I've been a reseller for a lot of people. But I still have it.
There's nothing wrong with, I mean, if you buy it, like, and you know, you just decide, well, I don't think I want this. Like,
you're more interested in what it did than actually playing it. I mean, and once you kind of get that information. Speaking of classic, I mean, there is the SNES comes out this. Man,
there
it's like
go. There's proof.
I'm hoping that I can get a SNES. I mean, I'm going to try to wait in line or something on... Man, what is going on? It's like the... There's not a very... It's like a delay in the jump. It doesn't seem like it's working the way that...
Like when you're trying to like jump off of the...
Yeah, the blocks.
Yeah, now she keep falling. Yeah, I ended up getting, I guess it was maybe last week.
Super Famicom, right?
Super Famicom Classic pre-order. I did not get a pre-order on NES Classic, or excuse me, Super Nintendo Classic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, you know, I just kind of got the pre-order because I could. And I was like, am I still going to want an American version or not? Or am I going to keep the Japanese pre-order? But you know, I think I will. I think I'll just get that and not worry about the American version. I mean, obviously the big thing with the Super Nintendo is, you know, Star Fox 2, but I don't think it's particularly going to bother me that it's in Japanese. I mean, I don't really care that much about like the character dialogue and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I do in like Star Fox 64, but like in Super Nintendo Star Fox, I don't think I really care. I can always look up a translation someday if I want to. I think that'll just be cool. Because other than Street Fighter 2, like, I think I own every single cartridge that is in the Super Nintendo Classic anyway, which is very much unlike... The situation with the NES Classic, where there were a ton of games and that I didn't have, but most of the ones that I didn't have were ones that I really didn't have much interest in anyway.
Let me jump in here. Somebody want to know if they're a PAL TG-16 has ever been modded? Modded for what? RGB or anything? I assume yes. I mean, they're pretty much all RGB capable.
Is there such a thing as a PAL TurboGrafx?
It's like it got a gray plastic to it. It's pretty cool.
Really?
Because I thought...
What's the form factor like?
It's exactly the same as the US. It's just a different color.
Interesting. I've never seen one before.
Because for some reason, I thought Europe only had... Like, I heard that France has a bit of a PC Engine scene, but it was just called PC Engine. And it was... From my understanding, it was mostly from... some particular seller, which, if I'm not mistaken, was like sort of an official agreement with NEC, but maybe not. I'm not really sure. But they just kind of brought PC Engine to France, and I don't know about other places in Europe. But I was definitely under the impression that there was not like a proper PC Engine or TurboGrafx release in Europe.
Here you go.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
That's the PAL version.
That's cool.
There's also a second box that has more stuff in it. I can't remember what's in the second box. It's been a long time since I've had this damn off the shelf. Oh, by the way, somebody asked about Ultra Trace My Kids.
You're waiting for that.
So I'll answer that now. I don't know. I'm not in control of that. That's all Marshall. Okay, there's the gray collar of it.
That's cool.
That is really cool.
I can't quite tell what color the logo is. It's a little different from the American colors, isn't it?
It's way different. It's just got red and blue underneath of it.
It's good you have that, though, because, you know, eventually when we do this TurboGrafx 16 episode, you know, we're going to need to...
Yeah, you can head out that way and get a shot of that.
Yeah. Jason only lives about an hour and a half away from me. Like, yeah, this whole area, like, there's, like, so much stuff here. It's kind of, it's crazy. I know I talk about it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, when you see them side by side, it's, you know, it's actually not that different, or at least it looks that way in the camera.
That's way for, it's not going to show up on the stream, because...
Because I was talking. Yeah. Well, it did. It showed up some. You know, I remember there was this stupid argument with some people in high school that were like, that were saying the N64 was gray. And I'm like, no, it's black.
It is kind of like gray.
I would not classify it as gray, though. I mean, it's a dark, it's a very dark gray, or a lightish black, which might sound like an oxymoron, but it's totally black. I mean, you compare it to Nintendo's other consoles. I mean, they were definitely going for black. It may not be like, you know, the blackest black from the depths of your soul, but I mean it's black.
I never really thought about it that much, I guess, but I've always just thought it was kind of grayish.
No, it's totally black.
All right. Well,
I mean, it's got like
413. Also wanted to know about replacing the factory din for a RGB modded Peace Engine Duo. Yeah, you need to if you want to. Let's see, it's like a 5-pin on there, and you need to replace it with an 8-pin. If you want to have RGB SCART cord connected to it, but I think I looked on Mauser for it, and I didn't see it. I'd actually like to know where to get them myself nowadays. I'm guessing people get them off eBay or whatever.
You just recently did a video where you were repairing a Dugin Dance system, right?
Yeah, do you guys know how to say that? Dugin Dance.
Dugin Dance?
But somebody else was saying Dugin Dance or something like that?
Yeah, I always said Dugin Dance. Or if you're Voltar. I always said Dugin Dance, but... You know, I can imagine that that's completely wrong, but I wonder if he's like actually, or he or she, I don't know, which seeming like the mods had improved a little bit lately after kind of getting.
Actually, yeah.
What's they that? Have, huh?
Oh, yeah. He's still selling on eBay, and you can go and look at him. They look way better.
Yeah. I wonder if because of everyone calling him out.
Oh, definitely. Which was the whole point. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Call him out just for entertainment. You know, it was, hey, you need to try to do better, you know? I mean, because people were actually having actual problems with the mods. It just wasn't that it was bad mod work and it looked like crap. It was actually failing.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's inevitable when you are using bubble wrap to wrap the... RGB amp.
And you didn't really realize until you got your system back from Voltar, like, and then you did some comparisons, like, I mean, it was definitely not as vibrant of an image as it was supposed to have been.
Oh, previously. Yeah. There's a lot of weirdness kind of going on with it.
I think you were still on that version when we did like a little...
A Keith Courage. Was it Keith Courage or was it...
Well, I was going to say when when I was at your house and we recorded just a fun little video for patrons. Right.
That was only a year ago.
I played a bunch of TurboGrafx games. Was that a year? Was that when I was there last October? That hasn't feel like that long ago.
Man, I should have just gone for the boss instead. I ended up wasting that life.
Well, yeah, there was nothing over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to think that was like a year ago already. And that Let's Play is on our Patreon for people that are interested.
Yeah, we kind of put sort of lighter, more casual videos on the Patreon, things that we want to do for fun, and we think that people might enjoy, but we don't want to pretend like that's like main content that effort was put into.
There we go.
I thought it was kind of funny though, because there was a comment, I think it was on Twitter maybe, recently, that was like, wow, you subscribe to My Life in Gaming on Patreon, and it just opens up this whole world of new videos. And I'm thinking, well, don't oversell them. I mean, they're fun. I'm glad you enjoy them. But they aren't. Don't be expecting the same kind of content that we actually release on the channel.
I mean, like polished videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you know, it's not like a video that we put on the channel has to be long, but you know, it's usually something that we, you know, wrote a script for, and you know, had, you know, put some
it's like kind of vloggy, I guess. We always call them video logs.
Yeah, I mean, it's not strictly that format.
How do I do this without dying?
It does look like you get hurt every time you bonk. Do you have to just hit the leg, maybe?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's always the head.
It was definitely a different sort of boss.
Oh.
Might not follow the same format.
Bonehead.
Did you get my package yet, Corey?
No, probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. That's cool. I meant to send yours out yesterday. And I didn't do it. See, the post office closes at 1:00, and
on Saturday.
Yeah. And you know, like when the wife and kids are out of town, I can like sleep in a little bit extra, and I'm so slow to like actually like get the things that I should be doing. But I'll try to go tomorrow. I'll try to walk over there. I mean, it's walking distance.
So after you finished the episode that we released today, you were like really excited to get back into Ys 8.
Oh man, I think I played like 10 hours since like last night.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So how many hours into the game would you say you are?
I'm 18 hours.
Oh wow. So that's pretty far. I mean, I think the longest an Ys game has been is maybe like 30 hours. Seven had some padding.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It is a fantastic.
I'm definitely excited. Did you get your Ys Origin?
No, not yet.
Has it even shipped?
Yeah, it'll probably be here tomorrow.
Okay, I got mine yesterday.
Oh my gosh, I'm like running out of lives here. I didn't realize I was so low on lives. I beat the first one on Virtual Console. Believe it or not. Didn't you?
No. I beat the first one on... I actually beat it on my PC Engine interface unit before Voltar modded it.
Oh.
I played it in composite video on my... On my CRT upstairs.
I see. Just seemed the way to do it, huh?
Well, I think I was I think I was desperate for a beat for backlog reasons.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I think I can beat Bonk pretty quick.
I think this one's definitely going to end up being a lot tougher.
I feel like there's like kind of a lot of interesting, like, detailed sorts of, I don't know if I want to say set pieces, but, you know, there definitely seems to be a different style to the level, the visual design of the levels, at least.
Yeah, it's definitely not nearly as straightforward as the previous games.
Now, the Bonk 3, am I right in believing that came to cue card format, and but then also CD?
Yes. And
the CD one is the one that's really, really rare.
Yeah, and it's actually not as good, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
What, any particular reasons?
That's just what they said on the GameStacks recently. They gave the reasons why it's not as good, but I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember hearing that, but I'm guessing load times?
Could
probably
be a
factor. I think it has something to do with, like, I don't know. I think it's something else.
Music?
But they're both versions are really, really expensive. Pretty sure it has a two-player simultaneous mode, though.
Is there an affordable version of the game? Affordable physical version?
PC version would be cheaper.
Like Japanese cue card version?
Yeah.
Let me look that up, because I've something I need to be aware of. Maybe I stop at Bonk's Revenge. I think it'd just be called PC Genjin 3. Well, here's a brand new one for $170. And here's a complete one for $95. And I do cue card only. Oh wow, here's a not for sale one. A Japanese not for sale, which I don't think I've ever seen Japanese not for sale stuff before. I mean, it's not something that really interests me personally, but this one is $550.
Christopher in the chat said he bought Bonk 3 with CD case today for $320.
Whoo! Nice.
That's probably a bargain, actually.
Yeah. Here's a cue card only one for $50. Here's one for $59. I could see myself. Here's another for $50, $55. I mean, I would be willing to pay $50-ish for Bonk 3 cue card.
Yeah.
Especially because I feel like it would kind of complete what I would want out of my
Bonk
experience.
Well, especially if you're getting,
if I'm getting one and two.
I thought I was doing so good because I had all these lives, and now, not anymore.
Yeah, I forgot that you revive where you die.
I guess we'll find out pretty soon. Maybe.
Well, I mean, you revive where you die. Like you don't when you die.
Yeah.
You know, you don't go back to the beginning of the level. It's only when you totally run out of lives.
Which is one of the cooler things about this, I think.
Yeah, it is, and it's, you know, and it plays in well with the fact that that you can kind of rack up a lot of lives, like you say, you know.
Yeah.
Christopher paid $320 for the cue card version, not the CD version.
Ah.
I was going to say, if it was the CD, it was probably...
Oh, in the CD case, then.
Like right.
See, honestly, like, you know, part of the reason I decided to go cue card... I mean, the main reason I decided to go cue card only for PC Engine was, it, you know, it was cheaper, but... honestly, like, I kind of just like displaying the hue cards. Like, I've just got them on a acrylic shelf, you know, sort of leaning up and facing forward, and I think it looks cool, because I just like looking at the hue cards themselves, like, and especially the Japanese ones have, like, you know, such colorful artwork on them, whereas, you know, the American ones are kind of drab.
It's like they were trying to market kids instead of gamers, you know?
I kind of like the look of this boss.
Yeah. Did I do it? Please be dead. No, of course not. It's my last life of my... Ugh. No, there we go. Watch there be, like, no continues. No, you get three continues.
Really? Only three?
Yeah. I feel like the first one was like that.
I felt like the first one had infinite, but...
And it sends you back to the beginning of the world. And, you know, it wouldn't be a problem. I just think that they are kind of long. Like, the levels are pretty long. Come on. Yeah, so I think it's going to be one of those things where you have to, like, it's probably best to, like, rack up as many lives at the beginning as you can. So you never have to... Look at this. Like, I can't even. I already died.
Oh, no.
I know.
Can you just ignore the enemies that are sitting on the chairs?
Yeah, you can probably ignore all the enemies in this game, really.
But, I mean, I don't think those even move unless you provoke them. Maybe.
Somebody wants to know if I'm going to fix my PVM.
Oh, is it broken?
It has been for about 3 years.
Oh, I thought you tested stuff on it.
Do what?
I thought you tested stuff on it.
I do, but I don't need it to be perfect to test.
Oh, yeah. What's wrong with it?
Overpowering red, and somebody recently commented on the last video that it's possibly a shorted tube. Like, a Sony repair tech told him that.
You know.
Which, I don't really care, because I got my use out of it back in the NES RGB days.
Yeah.
And it's really just too big for that work area right there anyway. So Bob is actually possibly going to sell me a 14-inch BVM.
Oh.
So it'll free up some space on the desk. But no, I don't probably won't try to fix this one. I've had it apart a little bit to try to see if there was some adjustment I could just easily make it better. And it did make it a little bit better, but it sure didn't fix it.
I've got a 9-inch PVM that I just took home from work because it was, you know, we were clearing out a bunch of stuff at work, and that particular one never worked in all the years that I had worked there. And I just took it because I just thought it looked cool. I didn't know people played video games on them. I had no idea. And so I just took it because, you know, I like collecting useless old junk, but little did I know that if it did work, it wouldn't have been useless at all. But it was kind of funny because, like, the funny thing is, like, we got into RGB like because of the Framemeister, and, you know, and I still didn't know that people were playing video games on these professional monitors, and it was like a big deal. And then, you know, we did start hearing about people playing on, like, monitors? Like, what? I don't understand what you're talking about. And it's like, oh, it's like that broken CRT I have in my unfinished storage. It's like, so... Yeah.
Let's see.
Now, if anybody wants to volunteer to fix it for me, I'd be glad to send it to them.
That's kind of a pain, though, to ship it. Too.
I was, Voltar, when I stopped by his house to the last time I was at Corey's, I stopped by Voltar's house because it was on the way, and I stopped by there just to drop off some systems I wanted him to work on. And I saw, you know, in his garage, he had a SCART RGB modded Sony Trinitron, and he was just like all casually like, yeah, take it if you want. And I'm like, are you serious?
But it was so huge that.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I think he kept saying it was a 36 incher, but I'm convinced it was 32. But regardless, like, I feel like the biggest CRT I have is, I think, 24 inches. And I would be willing to take like a 27.
Yeah, that's what I have. And I want to get, he's going to mod that one eventually.
I would be willing to accept a 27, but I got rid of my 36 like a year and a half ago. Like, it was an HD CRT, so it wasn't really the, you know, the retro style look that it gave anyone. But I can't do that again. The main reason I got rid of it was because I wasn't doing anything serious with it, and it was just taking up so much space, and it was causing me to like not use my upstairs space very well because I just didn't know what I wanted to do with this one thing that dominated the whole space. And I definitely don't have any regrets getting rid of that. So definitely,
unless we need it one day.
That's why I took footage of it before I got rid of it, you know?
Yeah. Jason, what was the first mod you ever did? Console mod. Like, how did you get into doing all this?
Yeah, we talked about this. Me and Bob did an interview with me here.
Oh, yeah, on his, on the Retro RGB Weekly Roundup.
Yeah. Yeah, that was when he was still putting the interviews with the Roundup.
Right.
It's a cool story because of how it is, but like early 2000s, like probably late 2001, I found eBay for the first time. So I did what everybody does when they find eBay. You fulfill all your childhood dreams and you buy all the stuff that you wanted as a kid, right?
Yeah.
So I bought baseball cards. And thought I was going to get back into that, and it was a complete waste of time. So I also wanted to play Zelda again, because that was my favorite NES game and one of the few NES games I had when I was a kid. So I was looking around, and I wanted the biggest lot of games I could find for cheap, because I love finding a deal or whatever. And I found a top loader lot that had Zelda, and I didn't even know what the top loader was at that point. Had no clue.
Mm.
So I bought it and played it for a little while and got bored, and somehow or other I found Kev Chris's write-up on how to composite mod the top loader.
Ah!
GamesX or GameSX.com, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did it, and then I started doing it on more top loaders that I bought on eBay and reselling them on eBay modded. And it has spiraled out of control from there.
did he didn't like invent like the composite mod for it, did he?
He made one, yes. He made his own version of it, and it sucked, actually. He even admits it. He said, yeah, I did that before I really understood video signals. But they still, I looked for it the other day, and it's still up there.
Interesting.
So fast forward to, 2014, I think. I had an M82, and I was doing a YouTube video about it. And I was going to NES RGB mod it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Kentris contacted me and said he wanted to, or he said, you know, I figured out that you were local-ish. You know, I'd like to come down and check out the M82. And I was like, holy shit, I know who you are! he's a fucking legend, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that was super cool. I screwed up. I should have had the cameras rolling because the first, you know, 20, 30 minutes that he was here, we talked about everything. You know, and of course, as soon as I started the camera, I couldn't remember any of it, you know?
Right.
it was awesome. That whole series was awesome. The M82, where he, like, reverse engineered it and then come up with a ASIC replacement chip that we still haven't got it for sale yet.
I remember seeing a video on your channel about, I forget exactly how it went, but you had a pretty good NES Sharp TV story.
Oh, yeah. That still blows my mind. I never look for video game stuff on Craigslist. And I just happened to look, I think I searched Shelbyville for the Indianapolis Craigslist, and a freaking Sharp NES TV popped up.
That's crazy.
And I didn't actually know what it was completely. And you know, a little bit of Google searching, and I find out that this thing is a must own. So I call the dude, and this is like 10 o'clock at night. I'm like scrambling to get this thing, you know?
You're like, I need this.
And come to find out, it was like 100 yards away from me. Insane. Totally insane.
Just like your neighbor?
Like a subdivision over kind of a thing.
That's crazy.
That was really crazy. That was fun too, because I found out the remote is really rare for it, but you can just get this other model remote that works for other Sharp TVs. Mm-hmm. And that you can just cut out a hole, and even the game TV switch button still works too. But it's like, you know, $5-$10. And as soon as I put that video out, there was like, you know, 5 or 10 of them for sale on eBay, and they were all gone the next day. Yeah. And I can't really say as I've seen any since either. But I call that a win.
I did it. Brute.
I feel like your method of just like getting all up in them isn't exactly how you were supposed to do it.
Yeah, I don't care.
It worked.
But that's crazy. So I mean, you still have it?
The Sharp NES TV?
Yeah.
Uh huh. Voltar drew up a circuit to RGB mod it.
Really?
So as soon as I have less priorities, I guess I'll attempt that, because I've always wanted to.
That'd be a great video series for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that there's probably no one in the universe who's ever done that.
Right. Well, yeah, like NSRGB mod in the M82. Why, you know, why would you do that? But I did it.
Yeah,
I want to say somebody high def NES modded the M82 and it didn't work. But this was like several revisions ago for the firmware. So it's possible that it might work now. That'd be kind of fun. I almost bought another one. There was one for sale on eBay just this past week, but it sold for like $2,650.
How much?
Wow.
$2,650.
Holy cow.
I mean, it had some games in it, but other than that, it was just stock.
Someone's asking what kind of capture card we use. We use an AverMedia, what is it, the Extreme Cap U3, although yeah, we hope to be upgrading pretty soon. At least one of us is upgrading soon.
It's pretty old, so I mean it's been real good to us. It's not like it, you know, offers any particularly amazing features. I mean, it was like the first like consumer level capture card to support 1080p at 60 frames.
Right.
And like we like as soon as it was announced, like we both bought it. I mean, it's probably like about 4 years old by now, I would say. But I, you know, I would say Avermedia has been a good card. So
yeah,
you know, I would, you know, I would definitely recommend looking into what Avermedia has, but I wouldn't, you know, one big downside to this card that I think would be an issue for maybe most people is that it doesn't have HDMI pass through.
Right.
So I think that would be a big issue for a lot of people because, you know, a lot of people, you know, we already had like HDMI splitters, so it didn't even matter. But, you know, most people probably don't have HDMI splitters, or, you know, that's a potentially significant extra expense. So, yeah. But I'm going to soon. I may still use the Avermedia to some extent, at least maybe as a secondary stream source or something like that. Or actually, really, I probably will capture certain systems on it because I've got like a dual HDMI switcher deal going on now. But I'm going to get, it's pretty expensive. But it's one of the cards that Digital Foundry uses. It's a Magewell 4K capture card. Not necessarily getting it so much for 4K direct capture as I am because it will accept the OSSC even in SNES at 5X. So that is pretty important, I think. But the nice thing is it apparently it is extremely hardware intensive to capture native 4K.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff about 4K that you're doing a video on 4K capture and all this other
after
stuff.
After the PS2 episode, yeah. Not really 4K capture so much as just playing on 4K TV, but 4K capture will play a role. And I'll definitely, before then, definitely have that. Because I'm planning to do a whole new computer build in addition to that.
Right.
In addition to getting the Magewell card. But anyway, so... yeah, I forget where I was originally going with that, but... But oh yeah, so 4K sources like, you know, the PS4 Pro, Xbox One X, I will be able to still like capture those connected to the same device. I'll be able to like play them in 4K, but have the card downscale them to 1080p, and that, you know, won't be as intensive to encode.
There's no capture devices that support HDR right now, is there?
Well,
I mean, YouTube supports HDR.
I don't know about like I'm not sure about like an internal card or a USB card, but you can get like a Atmos
the Shogun. Ninja Shogun, that's it.
Or well, Ninja Inferno is. You know, if you don't need SDI, then the Ninja Inferno is the one to get.
Yeah,
and I really
that's like on our dream list. Is like
yeah,
like
that that's definitely on my dream list. Like it, I want to say that's like $1,000. And but the thing is, it's like a self-contained unit that, you know, is a recorder. It's got a screen. You know, it records 4K HDR. Doesn't drop frames. You know, it's not dependent on the processing of, you know, a computer.
That's like a really hard F on the 4K. You said it, you're like, 4K. I don't know why I just like made a funny noise. You're like, 4K. Sorry. It's got 4K.
Sorry, but anyway, yeah, like I definitely want one, but
I'm hitting a roadblock in this real hard,
because I mean it's, you know, in the same ballpark price range as the Magewell. And I was thinking about it, but it unfortunately does not accept OSSC very well. It's much more of a professional device, which means that it wants to, you know, have pretty on-spec input.
Something's going on here. This is pretty serious. Look at this. Is this like the end? Wow. Is this like the last level, I wonder? Oh my gosh.
That looks pretty last level-y.
Yeah.
I want to say wasn't the last boss of the first game on the moon?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, you know, I felt like you had a ways to go, but
this could be.
It'll be a close call given the whole continue.
My last continue. I guess no way I can do this.
But, you know, you might be getting closer than it was looking like. But,
okay, about the 4K.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely want to get one of those eventually, but for now, it's much more of a priority to get something that will capture anything the OSSC spits out.
Right.
Which, I consider that a very high priority.
It's pretty exciting. I think it's going to be a real interesting episode that I'm not going to be able to do anything on. Really?
Yeah, we'll find a place for you.
Wait, you think will it be an RGB episode, do you feel?
I think so. I don't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, I'm basically thinking it's going to be called, you know, Modern and Retro Gaming on 4K TVs.
All right.
Either that or retro and modern.
Can you imagine it being like RGB 106? You think?
I guess it's possible because it's going to be going over like a lot of stuff, like, you know, not just 4K consoles, but I'm also going to talk about, like, I mean, it's going to be about hooking up your video games to your 4K TV and how to optimize and streamline and get them best set correctly, regardless of whether it's modern or retro or, you know, even, you know, last gen. Like, it, you know, I'm going to talk about, you know, because there are considerations about how what settings you would use on your PS3 or your Xbox 360. Like, you know, you might think that there's not, but there are. So yeah, I mean, it's going to get into that kind of stuff too. I mean, it's just kind of going to be a general, you know, it's going to get into the specifics of two 4K TVs, basically mine. And the one that our friend Drumble owns. It's not really, I don't think so much going to be reviews of those as it's going to be into, you know, like, okay, here's like a range of 4K TVs. And, you know, if at this point you're in the market for a TV, there's basically no reason to not get a 4K TV because, I mean, the cost between 4K and 1080p is like not that much at this point. So you may as well. So what do you need to know? You know, most of your games aren't going to be native 4K. Or even, you know, I mean, you know, I say native 4K, I don't really mean native 4K, but I mean your system isn't going to be outputting 4K, you know. So how does that look?
Right.
I think the OSSC support is like one of the most exciting things about my TV. You know, I mean, sure, I can play, you know, PS4 and Xbox, soon Xbox games in 4K, but, you know, it's like, ooh, you know, I can, my Super Nintendo looks real good.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing with OSSC, really, I think the color, like, it's very obvious, like, how much better the color is on the OSSC compared to the FrameMeister. Mm-hmm. But still, the best thing about the FrameMeister is that it, you know, you don't have to have those questions of, is it going to work? Now, actually, I did have some trouble with the FrameMeister on my 4K TV. That's something I'm going to talk about, too, because...
Oh, I got an extra heart. You can get extra hearts?
That sounds familiar from the first game, but I think it's like only for, you know, that continue. That blue thing doesn't look familiar, though. I don't remember that from the first. But yeah, I had trouble with the FrameMeister because the FrameMeister screws up color and audio if your TV is set for deep color. Like, the FrameMeister claims to support...
I'm never going to find out if this is going to be the last boss up here. I will never find out. Because I'm going to die before I reach the top. Sorry. I just... I really want to live long enough to see it.
Well, I remember the first game had, like, had a boss rush, but... Right. It also had, I'm pretty sure, infinite continues.
I don't think it did.
I think it did. Well,
let's see if this is what it's going to be.
I remember getting a lot of
game
over. If
it's the last boss, I feel like... This doesn't look like the last boss. Oh, yeah, Jason's still here. Yeah, have you, like, experimented too much with, like, 4K at all?
No.
I haven't either.
It's a mess. I don't really recommend it until I release my video. Then But I mean it was just, you know, just so many considerations that you don't really think about, like, you know, whether an HDMI cable is even going to get the signal from point A to point B. Like, it's difficult.
Back to the title screen.
Oh, that could have been a final boss.
That was not the final boss.
I don't think it was, but it...
Will you look it up and see how long it is? Because that was, like, chapter 6, I think.
I think that's right. Let me see.
Because maybe I'll try and do, like, one run a night or something.
Yeah, I mean, that only took you, I mean, to play that much, that took you, like, what, like, an hour?
Hour and a half. Oh, yeah, an hour.
Less than an hour. Much less than an hour. Or not much less than an hour, but less than an hour.
It was only that one boss. It's because of that one boss, I think.
Oh, the dancer?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got hit every time you hit her. Let's see. So you're on round 6, boss flying robot. Okay, here is round 7. Round 7 is the last round.
Okay. Is it long or is it just straight to the boss?
It looks like it might be a little long.
Okay.
Or hold on a second. Oh, I think it's like, I think you gotta take, like, multiple paths.
Okay.
So it's like there's 4 capsules, you know, number 1, 2, 3, 4. So I think you gotta, like, get through, like, 4 different rooms.
Okay.
Oh, it does look like you're gonna have to fight some bosses again, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, none of the bosses are really that tough.
I remember, though, that the even though it wasn't like a new world, mm-hmm. in the first game, when you got to the boss rush, it actually kept you there. And after you finished the boss rush, I think it kept you there, too.
Really?
So it was actually very just. I'm almost positive the first game had infinite. You know, it's possible that the Japanese and the American versions were different in that regard.
It's true.
Because I played the Japanese version.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was infinite continues. Because I remember seeing the title screen a bunch.
Oh. So, Jason, do you have anything? Like, what are some other games you like? I might have something. Like, I know you like the first Legendary Axe. Should I play the first Legendary Axe?
Sure.
All right, I'll be right back.
I'd love to see it. I mean, I've seen some of it. I have it. I've played like a level.
That's the problem, though, is I only had experience like with those three games.
What was the other one? The third one?
Keith Courage?
Oh, yeah. I guess how, if you had a TurboGrafx, how could you not?
I think I've got about 40 of them still, actually. It's like the easiest game to collect ever.
Yeah, and I don't have it, and I don't really want it.
You don't need it.
That's
it's not like it's terrible, but for a packing game, they could have done a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I saw Corey beat it on stream. I mean, I guess it was doable. The Legendary Axe.
The Legendary Axe.
It just says Legendary Axe on the hue card, though.
Right. I think this game's really good.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've played, it seems great.
So why don't you guys stream the chat window into the live stream that gets uploaded on the frame?
Maybe that's something we can, like, we should do it at some point in the future. We just haven't ever done it.
Yeah. But that's definitely something some people do.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
not a bad idea for sure.
Yeah,
I did it on my last stream, but only because that was most of the stream was just Q&A from the
right.
Channel. Right.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, I think we want to just like make an overall like different overlay graphic for the live streams too. We just haven't.
Yeah, we just haven't gotten around to it, but we keep saying we're going to do it.
Yeah. There's like a lot of stuff. There's another comment earlier today saying like, "Where is the geometry episode?"
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. It's got to happen. I just need to, like, you know, just commit. Say, you know, we're going to work with the resources we have.
And do you might actually have, like, a local-ish resource, right?
That's true. I mean, I should talk to them about it. Jason, do you have any real experience, like repairing CRTs or PBMs or anything?
Nope.
Because I know that Voltar has some experience. I wonder if he might be a good resource for it, too. But, like, so long ago, we said we were going to do a video on, like, CRT geometry and fixing them up and stuff.
Like, almost 2 years ago at this point, actually.
I think it's more than that, I think, at this point.
No, it was 2 years ago this December.
Oh. Well, no, we originally said it in the 240... test suite video.
Oh, was did
like,
we?
Yeah, which is like
really.
Yeah.
But it's, well, okay. So you that's right. You teased it there, and then when we did the CRT episode, you're like, there's no way I can include this in this episode.
Right. But just, I'm sure you know, like it's like it can be like very complicated. And we're just like so afraid of like putting like the wrong, like we want to get like a tech to help us is really what we've been hoping to do.
That's just been hard to coordinate.
Yeah.
And you still run into the same problems. If it's so big and heavy to ship it, then you want to find somebody local, and local may not exist.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a place around here called Volume Electronics, and I'm hoping I have I just got a 14L5 PVM from a friend, who the chat might know is the 8-bit Duke. And I have a BVM that I'm going to swap the tubes in, because the BVM kind of struggles with certain systems because of, I can't think of what it is, but it's like, it won't display certain things because it has to stick to like a very rigid spec, unlike a PVM, which is kind of like gives you a little bit more leeway. Like, for some reason, my BVM won't play like TurboGrafx-16 or the Dreamcast.
Hmm.
But they both work on PVMs fine. But anyways, the PVM that I got has like some burn-in because it was a security monitor, and it says like a front desk kind of burnt in at the top. So I'm going to take the BVM and I'm going to swap the tubes because they are the same. They're 800 line tubes. So I'm going to swap those, and the displaced volume can do that, I guess. So I need to talk to them about it.
Somebody said there's some CRT repair videos from Randy Fromm. Man, that sounds familiar. Like maybe I did look at some of them a few years ago, but I never got much further than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's like definitely not something that like I'm going to do myself. But I mean, like, I think that like that's definitely a good resource for people that are interested, because I don't even know when our video will come out.
Right. But, you know, it, when you go do this thing, like, ask them, like, can I, like, shoot video of you working on this?
Or just, like talk about it, you know?
Yeah. Ideally, we would get video of these processes, too, you know?
Right.
Not that we don't want to make videos about, like, the video wouldn't be about, like, repairing. Like, that's not us. Like, it would be about, you know, but the footage still might be useful, but like the video is still going to be about like, you know, what you can do without opening your CRT. I think anyway, that's always been my imagination.
Seems pretty tough. Try, I hope when you get to this, you're not like, this is way too hard. I don't even want to play. I'm going to get rid of it. I think this is one that I like kind of talked to you into, didn't I?
Well, I mean, I played it and thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I'm like getting crushed here. So that's like the state of the CRT repair episode. I mean, I'm just scared of it. Really.
Yeah, well, I mean, rightfully so. I mean, you know,
There's only three continues in this, too.
Huh?
There's only three continues in this, too.
I wonder how long it is. Let me check how long it is.
Yeah. Jason, what is the most challenging mod you've ever done? Is there, like, a mod that you did where you were, like, man, I don't want to do this. Like, you felt like kind of like scared of doing it.
It's hard to say now because I've done them all and now I'm all used to all of them and I don't remember being scared of them. Every time I've opened up a CRT, yeah, I'm terrified. But like the Vectrex, even the Vectrex has got a CRT in it and can kill you. You know what I mean?
Right. That's the big thing. So the boss of this level is just like this glowing green boulder.
You gotta bend down and hit him from the bottom.
Oh, okay. He's on my continues on the second level. In zone two. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, you know, with CRTs that people, like, you can die from it. I think that's like, we don't want to put the, like, not bad information. I mean, bad information, but just, you know, just we want to really stress that, like, this is like maybe something you shouldn't do to yourself.
Yeah, well, and I mean, like I said, my imagination has never been that the episode is going to be about, like, opening CRTs and, like, physically doing things inside them.
Right.
Like, you might say that, you know, this issue you're seeing could be related to, you know, issues inside, and, you know, you might have a, you know, CRT technician take a look, or here's how to find a CRT technician these days, but as far as our part, like, I mean, I'd leave, you know, technical, like, I mean, that's like, I mean, we don't do modding videos. I mean, that's, you know, that's essentially a modding video, and the dangerous one at that. My thought on the geometry episode is just about, like, what you, a normal person, can realistically do to improve your geometry.
Corey. Right.
Yes.
You're killing me.
I need...
Turn your turbo on.
Well, now, you want to get, like, the charge, yeah, don't you?
There, just turbo it.
All right. Well, you get that charge. You see, you know how it charges
is,
up.
Is turboing more effective damage over time than charging your axe?
Well, it keeps the rock from ever coming at you.
Ah.
You hit it 20 times instead of having a charged axe.
Okay.
And I think it's faster. If your axe isn't charged, maybe.
Alright, well. I only used 3 continues that boulder. Oh, well.
Man, I don't remember being that difficult.
It probably was. It's probably not.
Is your turbo turned all the way up, maybe?
Yeah.
You're on the slow turbo setting?
No, I was all the way up there.
Maybe you need to be in the middle then. Sometimes it messes with you like that.
It looks like this is 6 zones, but the 6th zone is only the final boss.
Okay. Well, this one is zone 3A. So there's going to be multiple zones in this one.
Oh, yeah. There's some kind of thing that you can get that makes your axe go faster.
Maybe it's something I had before and was...
You gotta get all those totems. And see what's in them.
It looks like level, let's see, it's like zone 5 is a bit of a maze.
Well, there's like no chance of me like ever getting there.
Ever? Yeah, it looks like there are 2 sections to zone B and 3 to zone 4, and then 5 is more stuff.
Oh, there's some totems over there. I was just thinking it looks cool, like how he swings like the little hatchet.
Yeah, like, and I like the way that, like, some of the enemies, like, have this sort of knockback. Like, it's a satisfying sort of hit.
Yeah.
I can tell you guys are gamers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sadly, we don't get, you know, get around to finishing as many games as we used to, though, because the show takes so much time, you know?
Yeah.
Nerdly Pleasures wants to know... No. Jake Scott wants to know, what's a good way for a beginner to start practice soldering?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think my first experience was with... I did like a homeschool course for electronics through Cleveland Institute of Electronics or Engineering or something like that. And they would send you a kit to put together. And all it was like a battery operated circuit board with a speaker, and it had
you can get those at Radio Shack if they're still around. Like a breadboard type thing. Is that what it was? What they're called?
No, this was a full, I think it was a PCB. It was, you know, it had printed circuitry on it. It wasn't just, you didn't have to solder each hole together. You just had to solder the components onto the PCB.
Okay. Was it challenging for you at first?
It was like a two or three part thing where, like, you got these little books that are pretty thin and small, and one of them would have like 2 or 3 lessons in it. And one of the lessons might just be about soldering and just learning what to do before you even touch a soldering iron.
Right. Was it something that, you know, you immediately kind of enjoyed?
Soldering or
yeah.
Learning solder?
Well, I mean, learning. sadder? Or is it just like, that's like such a small part of it, really, I guess.
Well, yeah, the actual how-to kit thing was pretty lame, honestly. Like, I probably could have stepped up beyond that right away and been more satisfied, because it just felt like it was way too beginner-ish, like that was made for my sister to learn how to solder, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had already probably already soldered, I just wasn't doing it right.
Right.
You know, I wasn't using enough flux or the right temperature or whatever.
Now, what was it that made you interested in learning?
I don't like learning.
Well, what made you interested in soldering in the first place? Like, this was before you wanted to composite mod that top loader NES.
Actually, I'm thinking this was after.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That doesn't sound right. No, it may have been after.
See, for some reason, I just had assumed that when you decide that, oh, I can do that, like, you know, you'd already had some experience.
So it was
pretty much driven by video game hardware originally.
Well, a lifelong interest in electronics, period. So not necessarily just video games. Like, when I was a kid, I took apart everything I owned. Anything mechanical, electronic.
Oh yeah, I mean, I
survived.
I definitely had a friend like that too.
I even took apart my sister's stuff.
In case you broke it.
You know what I like about this bear fight is that in this this fact that I opened up,
mm-hmm.
it says it calls the boss Demon Giants. And they're like so obviously just bears.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's like from the instruction manual or something. Because like, why would he have come up with that? It's so silly.
It just makes
Demon Giants.
Makes them sound a lot more scary, I guess.
The one like major thing I want to be able to do with soldering, and I haven't even tried yet.
Right there. Here you go. That'll probably make it go faster.
Is
there we go. Yeah. There it is.
Sorry, Mike.
I just want to learn to replace my batteries. You know, my cartridge batteries.
Oh.
Which yeah, is like super basic, but I mean, I say this as someone who like has never like truly soldered anything, and the idea of it sounds scary to me.
Well, you're already talking about a soldering iron that has more temperature requirement than your normal DIY first starting soldering, because the batteries have huge metal tabs on them, and it takes a lot of heat.
Yeah. See, I bought I was really in a pinch when I was working on our Game Boy episode last year, because I didn't have an original Game Boy that didn't have vertical lines, and like I just thought one day, like, oh, I'm just going to go to one of the local retro shops and just get one. Like, there was like zero doubt in my mind that I was going to come home with an original DMG01
is that better, Jason?
That's so much better, dude. Now you got it. There you go. Boom.
I haven't even lost a life yet.
Well, see, that's like, this might be that kind of game where you like you get the power up, and it's like never losing the spread shot in Contra, you know?
Yeah. But then you're screwed if you die. It's kinda like in Gradius.
It's easy. Yeah, that would have been a better example. But I'm more of a Contra man myself. But yeah, like so anyway, so like I was in a pinch and I needed a good working order DMG01, and you know, and that was when I read that, you know, all you have to do is like heat like the ribbon cable under the screen, and you know, so I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to go buy a cheap soldering iron. You know, which I know for a lot of people, you know, that's going to be like, oh, I hope you bought, you know, one with good temperature control and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, dude, I'm not trying to be a modder. Like, I just...
Yet.
I have no intention of being a modder. I have no intention of being a modder. And so it's like, you know, it really doesn't matter. So anyway, once I figured out the technique... Like, it took me a while to get it down, but once I, like, figured it out, like, it actually went really well. But I was, like, nervous for a long time because it wasn't working super well. Like, it took me, like, probably, like, an hour, like, total. In part because I was trying to shoot it, and also because... one or two of the screws was pretty badly stripped. So I had quite a time getting it out. But yeah, so I don't really know what I need for replacing batteries, but that's like something I really want to be able to do myself, because I mean, I could need that at any time, you know? And honestly, I've been putting off playing a number of games that I want to play for years because of battery concerns. You know, so that's something I really need to get around to taking care of. Like, I can make that into a little video.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I'm sure I've got approved technique by the likes of Voltar and Jason. But I don't want to show bad soldering technique.
There it is. There's the demon giant. Another demon giant. He's just a regular enemy now. Maybe.
Tifa giant.
Give me some health. There we go. Okay. Yeah, the only thing I've really soldered ever is like, I like kind of repaired a mod chip that was in one of my Model 1 PlayStation 1s. An old coworker like years and years ago put one in there. And it stopped working, and I kind of just like kind of touched it up and got it working.
What is the status on those systems? Because I remember you had a heck of a time for a while.
Oh, there goes everything. Yeah, I mean, like it's fine. I mean, it's Voltar did a just a PS1 mini, like with the. What's the mod chip on that called? Not like the Phantom or something like that. What is it called? Stealth. A stealth mod chip he put in it. So it works with the games that are not... that can detect the mod chip.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of... I mean, this is soft mod, not hard mod, but just it popped in my head. While I've got an audience here, let me ask a question. I've had a little hard time researching this because I really don't want to do it. But regarding the PS2 episode, and this is nothing that I, you know, want to really get into for the episode because I don't think it's really the point at all. But just so I can acknowledge it and not be wrong, does anyone here have experience with the soft mod for PS3 that lets you inject, you know, ISOs for PS2 into it and play those as PS2 classics, essentially? Like, does it use the exact same emulator that official PS2 classics use? Or is it something? I mean, I can't imagine it's another one, because that would be way too difficult to make on a PS3. I mean, it took Sony long enough as it was. But, like, my question is it the same emulator, and does it have the same options and the same scaling as official PS2 classics?
I don't know. Hopefully somebody else knows.
Somebody's asking me where they should offer their modding services. Like, they just got into Ultra HDMI, got pretty good at it. I would say forums is a good place to start. Just buy consoles and resell them on eBay. That's what a lot of people do. Just make sure you post pictures of the inside. And
yeah, that's kind of the most important thing, I think, these days. I mean, if there's anything that I've learned, is to, like, always see the mod before you pay money for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 3B.
I'm not seeing any responses to my my question about the PS3 soft mod. No one here with experience with that?
You're gonna have to figure it out yourself now.
No, I don't even want to do it. Like, I don't have any interest in it. I don't even know if I've got the firmware to do it. But I want to know, like, what it does. Like, my belief is it uses the same emulator as regular PS2 classics, but I don't want to say that and be wrong.
Right. Ace9921 is asking, yeah.
My question was the PlayStation 3 soft mod that lets you inject any PS2 ISO that you want into it. Also, that's a really cool waterfall background. I just really thought about that. It's, like, really good. Anyway, the PS2 soft mod lets you inject PS2 ISOs, play any PS2 game essentially as a PS2 classic. What does that use the same emulator as PS is official, properly bought PS2 classics, and have the same options and or any scaling differences or anything like that?
I don't know if I can.
Electron Ash, all PS2. You're asking about PS2. I have a PS3. Late PS2 Slims have the hardware chip removed, but they still play PS1 games. I mean, overall, pretty well, as far as I know, but it's not hardware anymore. It's emulated. There are many different PS2 Slims. Voltar would say that the only PS2 Slim series would be the 7700 series, or 77,000, or whatever you would call it.
I couldn't get out of it.
Wow. Ace says they use the built-in emulator. Most of the games I tried worked really badly, though. One of which would even yellow light of death the console. World Rally Championship. Wow. That didn't happen to you, did it, I hope?
Wow. So it, like, actually, like, full-on kills, just, like, straight-up kills the system?
Yeah, I that's crazy. Ace, I was responding to Electron Ash's comment about PS2 Slim. So yes, I do know that the the Metal Gear Solid 4 bundle, for example, that system has the GPU inside. But I'm talking about the soft mod that lets you play on any PS3 system, PS2 games on any PS3 system, which I assume uses the emulator that, you know, lets you play PS2 games on any system. The emulator being the official one for PS2 classics, which is a totally in software emulator. That's what I'm talking about.
Jason, have you had to do much with PS2s? Because wasn't the PS2 like considered like maybe the most difficult system to mod? Oh, he's not there. I didn't even know he walked away.
Oh, yeah, he vanished.
But that's what I've heard. I've heard that it's the most difficult to mod system.
You know, well, the crazy thing about the PS2 Classics emulator is when you go into the menu, like you can go change the some of the settings. Like for example, well, those like eyeball things are scary looking. You can change like the smoothing settings, for example. It's weird because it's like laggy. It's like slow, like the menu operates slow. So like I think like that software emulator is just like filling up the system, basically.
It's not running at the frame rate of the game, is it?
No, I mean, it just looked sluggish and slow. Like, it was not the frame rate of the game.
I see.
Like, because I was, like, I mean, I was, I mean, Shattered Soldier, for example, is 60.
Right. Jason, I was saying earlier, have you ever had to do, any PS2 stuff? Because isn't it considered, like, one of the most difficult systems to mod?
I have no idea. I've never touched it. I've never even played one.
Really?
Nope. Never have.
That's crazy to think about, really, because it's PS2. It's like the most successful system of all time, isn't it?
I don't know if it still is, but it might. It might be. Probably is.
What do you mean?
It just sold the most sales. Yeah.
Oh.
I feel like maybe the DS beat it.
Yeah, that's a portable. I don't know if I would put that in the same.
Yeah, I would count differently too. I was definitely looking this stuff up a while back, but I can't remember because I was looking it up for scripting purposes because I was, you know, in the script for the PS2 episode, I make this comment about you know, the PS1 was the best-selling system of all time, and you know, and then the PS2 went on to sell even more.
Right.
I don't know if it passed the PS1 like before the PS3 released or not, but I mean, it did at some point eventually pass the PS1.
Right.
Are these eyeball things the boss?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I feel like I've seen an enemy very similar to that in something. And I just can't think of what it is I'm thinking about. Like, it almost looks like something related to Dark Matter and Kirby.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like I've seen something like that, and maybe in like a really Japanesey game, like Goemon or Okami or something.
Maybe.
Speaking of Okami, like there's a reason. Like Okami, I feel like should be a game that like just like randomly appears in an RGB episodes a lot. But I was reminded that this weekend that there's very much a reason that Okami doesn't appear much. It's because, for one, I've got my in-game save in it. And as far as I know, you cannot leave the final dungeon. Like, I've never found a way out of it. And secondly, I thought I'd just play some of the beginning of the game and get some footage. And oh my gosh, like, the beginning of the game is so wordy. Like, there is just so much story, and it takes forever.
It's like 20 minutes or something before you can even play or something.
Oh, probably. And even then, like, it's a tutorial area where Eason stops you, like, every, like, two steps to, like, explain how to jump.
Oh, man.
It's funny, though. Like, I still feel like that is, like, the most not Hideki Kamiya game that he ever did. Like, I just never would have guessed. But, like, I mean, going back and knowing, and, like, I didn't really know who he was, like, at the time. Like, I played Beautiful Joe and loved it. And I think I knew that, like, Devil May Cry was kind of directed by the same guy as Beautiful Joe. But I don't think I knew really who he was until he left Capcom, I would say. Like, I never really saw him as, like, a prominent game developer personality, but he definitely is now. Like, I feel like I get his style now. I feel like I would have a much greater appreciation for the Devil May Cry games than I did when I originally played them. Because, like, I don't think he had that much to do with Devil May Cry 3, but, like, still, like, he established the style,
right?
And like, you know, I recorded the opening cutscenes and opening levels of Devil May Cry 1 and 3 this weekend. And, like, I get it now, you know? Like, I used to think, like, Dante was kind of a stupid character, and I didn't really understand, like, why people liked him. And, like, I never really understood, like, why people cared that, like, the Ninja Theory Devil May Cry, like, you know, so-called ruined Dante. And because I was like Dante wasn't a very good character to begin with. But, like, now that, like, I, like, kind of, like, get Kamiya as a director, and, like, I'm kind of going back and, like, looking at Dante in, like, kind of a fresh way, and I'm like, okay, this is pretty stupid but awesome. Like, my favorite thing was, and I mean, again, I don't think it's Kami in 3, is it? But my favorite thing in 3 was after the first level. I mean, the first level is, like, this hilarious, like, dance with, like, this pizza box that you know, he's, like, blowing
but
up.
He didn't direct that.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Right.
That's what I said. I said, but he, like, established his personality, I think. And I think they ran with it in 3
right.
really well, from what, you know, because I had forgotten so much about the game. It was a long time ago. But my favorite thing was, you know, there's the pizza box and, you know, the first level and all that. And that was great. But in the second level, he, like, puts his jacket on. And there's, like, this really over the top, like, sequence of him, like, putting the jacket on. And, like, as he's, like, moving his arm through the sleeve, there's, like, this first person view, like, from his hand. It's just, like, going down the sleeve.
Yeah, it's a little much for what it is.
I thought it was hilarious. but it's like I really put me in the mood to, like, properly replay those games, because I thought they were okay when I played them, but I didn't love them. But yeah.
Well, 1 and 3 are definitely worth, and I think that 4 is as well. Although I haven't finished it yet. So, Jason, are you, like, I think we kind of touched on it for a second. Like, you're kind of getting into, like, more of a, like, we're starting to do more, like, portable modding and stuff. Like, you is that, did you sell that Lynx yet?
With the Mikla? No, it's still up for sale.
That's crazy. That is crazy to me.
Well, how many people like the Lynx as much as you?
As much as me? I don't know. Like, I don't, like, I...
Maybe two people.
I don't know. Like, I'm not a huge Lynx fan, but I would say that
you've got a soft spot for it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the first portable system I had. I didn't get a Game Boy. I got a Lynx.
Model one.
Yeah, a Model one. You know, it's like I got it with Blue Lightning, which is like probably the best game on the system.
I don't even know what it is.
It's just it's kind of like Afterburner.
Oh, okay.
And that's, I think that's why.
I can see why you would like that.
Yeah. And, it, you know, it's really, it's an impressive system, I think. Jason, have you played much of it?
No.
Not even just, like, you didn't, like, mess around with it a little bit? But the one you're selling it comes with, what game does it come with?
I think. Was it Xenophobe, maybe? Or, I don't remember.
I don't remember what it was either.
I have a stack of games, and, like, all, they're all, like, corroded pins, so oof, half of them don't work.
Is that like a common problem, you think, with them?
I think they were just stored somewhere with some moisture, so it was all in one lot, so they were all messed up.
Because they kind of have like those exposed pins, right?
Yeah, and there's no like cases or anything for them.
It's like a U card.
Yeah,
I mean, it really
is. Basically, yeah. It is. Yeah,
yeah. You know, I've got a problem with my Ninja Spirit U card.
Yeah, I bet.
Because like
know.
Every time I put it in the system, like it's the graphics are corrupted in like the exact same way, and it looks clean, but I just don't know if there's anything I can do to fix it.
Not likely.
You think it's, so? That's just like a is that a? So it's like goes beyond like the pins not working, like it's something internally.
Could be bit rot or an internal connection's broken or.
Are they easy to open up and look at?
Yeah, you just gotta peel it back, really.
Really? But
there's not a lot to see. It's kind of like a glop top situation, usually.
A what?
Glop top.
What does that mean?
It just looks like a about a coin size of epoxy.
Oh, okay.
And it covers the actual, whatever you want to call it, electronics.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
they don't have to
make a big chip. They just put all of the stuff, the die or whatever, of the ROM right onto the PCB or the flex cable or whatever in that situation, and then they just glop top it.
So, but you don't think even if it was opened, you don't think there's really much fixing that could be done?
Nope.
Hmm.
Well, that's disappointing because you got a pretty good deal on that too, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was. I mean, it's like what, like a $50 game, and I think you grabbed it for me for like $30 or something.
It was cheaper than that, I think. Maybe.
Yeah, it's probably like $25.
That's cool. How different is the technology from like a, like the Master System card, or is it pretty much exactly the same, the way that it's done?
I would say probably pretty similar. I'm not the expert, though.
Because I think it's pretty impressive just that it's like, I didn't understand like how they worked for a long time. You know, I didn't understand there's like actually something in there. I always thought
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like how could there be something in there? It's like so thin.
Yeah.
I don't even know how big they can get, like, in terms of
Street Fighter 2 has, like, the whole added, like, a... Is it, like, RAM that they added on to it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's, like, that, like, kind of, like, bubble.
It's a thicker, bulkier card, like the, Super CD card.
Yeah. That's what I gotta get, eventually. Although I'm not sure how good the version is supposed to be. So Jason is sending me a couple of videotapes. Did you send those? Did you send those along with it? I think that I'm gonna do another. I have enough VHS tapes here to do another video game VHS episode. And Jason's sending me a couple of
secret repair tips.
Yeah, secret repair tip. I don't think there's any of them online or anything.
Really?
I mean, Tri, can you look really quick to see if anything shows up?
Yes.
Like on YouTube? Because I think it's going to be pretty pretty interesting.
IRATA systems, however you say that.
And it's just like, it's repairs for what systems? NES and...
If I search for secret repair tape, nothing like that appears to come up.
Where did you get them from?
Probably eBay. That's where I get everything. Everybody always asking that. Where'd you get them?
Are they Sega or Nintendo or what?
Yeah, there's a Sega Genesis and then I think it was a Nintendo one. It was Arizona. Wait,
okay. Here's one on the Sega.
Okay, so they do exist online.
But still, like, definitely not a
high resolution. High resolution.
Did you say there was a Nintendo one?
I think so.
Because I'm not finding that. There's two of them, you said, right?
Yeah.
I'm not finding that. But it did bring up a video that says Extreme NES Repairs. NES and games found Roddy and Barn for 20 years. Barn-tendo.
I think that video got a lot of views on one of my videos that I did.
Barn-tendo?
Barn? That's like the entire title of the video is Extreme NES Repairs. NES and games found rotting in barn for 20 years. Barn-tendo.
that's like the key word there. People are gonna remember like this. They're gonna remember this. The Barn-tendo.
Barn-tendo.
But I think that I think the video would be kind of fun. I got some how many do I have over there? I have quite a few. A viewer sent me a box. Showed up one day at the PO box. They had
Yeah, I think you like, showed like eight them at the end tapes of last week's stream.
No, I showed them to you guys beforehand.
Oh, okay.
But I think I'm just gonna do that. I had kind of a hard time getting through this most recent episode. I don't know what it was or why, but
you really wanted to play Ease.
Yeah, and I really just like couldn't get myself in any kind of zone. So it was like the editing was like it was a real slog on this one, and I feel like you can kind of tell maybe a little bit because there's like a notable lack of like sound effects. A lot of the B-roll is very
there
very same-ish.
A lot of sound effects to do anyway.
But. Yeah. But I think that like a VHS tape, another one could be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you were really inspired on that.
And, you know, like that's the thing is like videotapes, if you have that kind of material to like cut to, much like the Night Trap documentary, if you have stuff like that to cut to, it really just makes it much easier to edit.
Yeah, it's like always interesting.
Go to a soundbite, you know, if you need to.
Yeah. You know, I kind of had a hard time getting into the script writing of the PS2 episode. I wasn't feeling like super inspired by it at first either, but like I'm like over the course of the past week, I'm feeling a lot better about it. So hopefully it's not going to be too bad. I mean, it's going to be interesting because, you know, it's going into a system that isn't always as, you know, immediate access action like, yeah, you know, a lot of the systems that we have done
really
so
quick,
far.
Really quick. I see the Broken Sticks in the has the promo VHS for the Mega CD / Sega CD. If you're in the U.S., I think it's the one that you kind of see around is like, hey, maybe it's a commercial or something like that. It's like, you still only have a Sega CD. You should, if you want to lend it to me, we'll totally pay shipping because I would love to make a really nice copy of it for online, because a lot of people use that video for stuff, and they all use like the same like really crappy online version. And I would love to make a really clean version for people to use in the future.
And you could include it in the episode, maybe, if it fits.
Exactly. So if you're in the U.S., shoot us a message on Twitter or to, you know, like our email. He's in the U.K.
Oh, it's a PAL tape.
Yeah, I don't have any way to play it. I don't. You know, I have a Betamax tape here, or player here. I can't play. Oh, well. Thanks anyways. This is worth a shot. Okay.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you've got, like, some real good material.
Yeah, I mean, there's some fun stuff, and there's some, like Japanese ones.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, a Squaresoft one that has, like, Mario RPG and, what is it called? The Gun Hazard, which is Front Mission, done by the people who did the Assault Suit series, or the director of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, is that about wrap us up?
I think so. Hey, Jason, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah.
No problem. Anytime.
And someone go buy that Lynx.
Yeah, I just put a Ultra HDMI modded Pikachu in 64 up for sale too.
Did you really? That's like a really rare system, and with a mod in it, man, that's got to.
It ain't that rare.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of people kind of like want it because it's such a weird, unique looking system.
It's definitely iconic, and isn't it a little bit harder to mod just because of the way it's shaped?
I just posted a video today. And because what you're talking about, the bottom shell doesn't have the same plastic as the normal ones.
Mm.
So we got these plastic pieces 3D printed. One of my recommended modders, referral modders, Rob at OFS Mods, printed these out for me. Probably going to have them for sale on the site just for that reason. But
or are they specifically for it?
What's that?
They're specifically for those systems?
Just for the Pikachu system, yeah.
That's cool. That's nice. Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's like there was a really fun video, not a video, like a short film that these people did. I can't think of what it's called. It's like something called, it's some guy's name, Speedrun, and it's like all about like a, like someone stole his Pikachu N64. We will be back next week. I don't know what we have planned yet. That's going to do it. Thanks again, Jason.
All right. Yeah. See y'all later.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. Have a good night.
See ya.